We remember our veterans today. This is a day to endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus. This is a day for no fear for the people of God.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, this is a day to remember our veterans and to remember the families of our veterans. And I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to our veterans and to the families who have sacrificed together for the safety and protection of our country and for the safety and protection of other countries. Many times what you've done is thankless. Many times you've come back to suffer quietly and forgotten by the society, but you are not forgotten. We appreciate your efforts and your service. Michael Brown here. Welcome to the broadcast. We're going to have a great show today. I believe your hearts will be charged and encouraged and strengthened. Number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In a moment, we'll be joined by Tony Perkins, author of an important new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. And in fact, I'm going to be able to bring Tony Perkins on momentarily, 866-34-TRUTH. But let me say at this time that as we think about our soldiers, our military men and women who've sacrificed so much, Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2 and said, endure hardship as a good soldier of Messiah Jesus. We are all called to take up the cross. We are all called to deny ourselves. We are all called to swim against the tide, to go against the grain. And around the world, our brothers and sisters are being persecuted in unspeakable ways. And people close to us, one of our spiritual sons was martyred by Al-Qaeda serving in the Muslim world a few years ago. I've literally washed the feet of martyrs' widows on trips that I've done to India with the folks that we send out and work with there. Here in America, we're getting opposition on a different level. Our heads are not being chopped off. And yet there is intimidation. Yet there is fear. This is a time to stand strong and do what is right. And this Saturday, friends, Saturday in Greenville, South Carolina, if you're within a few hours, please join us. Tony Perkins will be speaking there as well. Senator Ted Cruz will be leading this meeting. I'll be leading in prayer. It is a religious freedoms rally this Saturday, Greenville, South Carolina. You can find out more by going to tedcruz.org. You'll find it right there on his homepage. Admission is free, but you need a ticket to get in, so go to that website and find out about it. Without further ado, it's my joy to bring Tony Perkins onto the Line of Fire. Tony, so great to have you on the air today.
Michael, great to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, absolutely, and it's going to be great to be in South Carolina together on Saturday.
I am looking forward to it, as we have seen increasingly, as you were just talking about, this attack on religious freedom in this country, and if we don't stand up and defend it here at home, we're not going to have the ability to defend our brothers and sisters abroad who are literally losing their lives for their faith.
So America, the strength of American Christianity plays a role worldwide. Is that what you're saying?
Well, as you know quite well, yes, absolutely. If we ignore what is happening here at home, we lose the foundation to advocate for believers around the world. And so we have a duty, I believe, to aggressively exercise and uphold the religious freedom that we have, which is not just it's not an American right, that's a human right. And we need to advocate for believers around the world and all people of different faith. But in particular, we need to start with those in the household of faith, those believers that are being targeted for nothing more than the fact that they named the name of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and friends, things are happening in America in ways that are really shocking. We saw the handwriting on the wall, but the reality is here. I want to get into this new book with Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council. You've seen him many times on TV, in the hot seat, speaking the truth with clarity. His new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. Franklin Graham says, Tony Perkins has delivered a masterpiece.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, we're talking about courage. It is Veterans Day today, and what a day to remind us to stand strong as good soldiers of Jesus. Not like the radical Muslims who are soldiers of Allah trying to take other people's lives in the name of religion. We are giving life in the name of Jesus. But as soldiers, we must endure ridicule, hardship, and threats that go beyond even ridicule and hardship. My guest, Tony Perkins, is president of the Family Research Council. His new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. Tony, this touched you very directly because you have been dangerously and misleadingly called a leader of a hate group. The Family Research Council has outrageously been dubbed a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And this touched you quite directly. What happened?
Well, about 3 years ago, we had a gunman, a homosexual activist who had been a volunteer at a local homosexual political activist group, came into our building armed with a handgun and 100 rounds of ammunition and 15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches, and he began shooting. He shot our building manager, who, despite being shot, was able to disarm this man and stop him before he took any further action and took the lives that he wanted to take. And he confessed to all that, and he confessed the fact that it was the Southern Poverty Law Center that had given him the inspiration and direction to do it through their hate map. And so we've seen it, up front and personal. But, you know, Michael, my background I was in the Marine Corps, came out, worked as a police officer before the Lord led me into the political realm, and I ran for public office and held office for about a decade. And I've seen increasingly over the last 20 years how we have seen the left, those with this radical, militant agenda, have become increasingly hostile to not just our ideas, but even the ability to express a counter view. And that's very dangerous for a republic such as ours, where you simply want to shut down debate. And that's exactly what the left wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take the theme of your book, No Fear. You start with Luke 12:5, I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. So Jesus actually commands us, don't fear people, because the worst they can do is kill you. That's just the body. Only fear God. If we fear God, then we will not fear man. And your new book, No Fear, is filled with examples of courage. And this is just everyday people, isn't it, Tony? It's not just the superstars and the famous ones. These are just everyday people who determine they have to stand up and do what's right.
Well, and primarily, Dr. Brown, they're millennials. There's about a dozen stories here, mostly millennials, who have stood up for their faith in different settings. And the origins of this is I was doing a Bible study, personal Bible study, probably been 5 years ago now, on the words no fear. It just kind of caught my eye as I did a word search, got all of those cases where it says fear not, have no fear, and I began to look at those, and those words, no fear, fear not, almost always preceded God doing something extraordinary through ordinary people. And then I began to see these stories that you don't see them a lot in the mainstream media, but I began to run across them, of young people, whether they were in high school, college, entertainers, who were standing unapologetically for their faith in Jesus Christ in a very hostile environment. And I said, this is amazing, because this is totally counter to what the mainstream media is telling us. They're telling us that the millennial generation is gone. They've walked away from the church and the faith.
Right, right.
And there's certainly some of that. I mean, you know, that I think they've walked away from the organized church because the organized church has walked away from the truth.
Exactly.
You know, instead of what you said earlier, Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. Now, a cross, that was not admonition to put on your bling. It was to take up a form of execution and die.
Yes.
And today, the church has transformed that message into grab your picnic basket and let's go have some fun. And sure, young people want to commit themselves to something that is greater than themselves. And that's what Jesus Christ did. He said, look, you commit yourself. You go ahead and die to yourself and to what you want, what you think, and you come follow me, and I'm going to use you to change the world. And that's what young people are waiting for. They're waiting to be challenged. And unfortunately, the church is not doing that today.
Yeah, I remember in the year 2000 meeting with young people across America who said to me, give me a cause and I'll die for it. They were a causeless generation. We see folks gravitating to these different causes. Now they're trying to find something to give their lives to. And I had Dr. Al Mohler on the phone with me yesterday on the show. And I was talking about it's the churches that are compromising the gospel that are really bleeding the most. And I recalled an article by Wolfhard Pannenberg, a German theologian, who had said that the reason people look to religion is they're looking for something other. And when the church is just like the world, they already have the world. So it's the Jesus way is always counterintuitive. The marketing way says just do it easy, do it the world's way, and everybody will come. Jesus says go the hard way, sacrifice service, but for eternal purposes. And then that's what people will give themselves to. And in your book, and folks, not only is this well-written, it's got study guide questions at the end of each chapter for personal reflection to help you make this real in your own life. But let's pick a few of these young people that have made a difference. Who is Lila Rose, and what's her story?
Well, Lila, I actually started the book with Lila. I came to know Lila a number of years ago as a freshman at UCLA. She was driven by a passion for the life issue, and she was one of the first to do an undercover operation into the Planned Parenthood clinic outside of UCLA, and it was explosive. She caught it recorded it on tape, and ended up being on Fox News, and that led to lawsuits and challenges. But it was the breach of this wall around Planned Parenthood, which literally led to what we've seen here in the last 6 months with the Center for Medical Progress coming very close to taking down Planned Parenthood with their trafficking in fetal body and baby body parts. So Lila, I got to know Lila as she began her national ministry. And so, as I got to know her, I said, well, she's one I would like to write the story about. And in these stories, I tell the story of these individuals, not just the climactic moment of which they stood, where they took a stand for their faith, but I go back and I tell their stories of how they came to have the courage to stand in their walk of faith. And then at each chapter, the second half of the chapter, is a biblical figure where I go into the stand that they took. In fact, in the case with Lila, I go into the Hebrew midwives and their story. Because what I don't want to do, Dr. Brown, is inspire people to be rebellious.
Exactly.
Or, you know, feed this strain of libertarianism that's flowing through our country today. What I want to do is equip young people to take and older people to take a biblical stand for truth in the face of opposition. And so each story is accompanied with a biblical parallel to the modern day story.
And it's so important that you talked about not feeding into rebellion or libertarianism. We are soldiers under command, and we simply obey the highest authority. You were in the Marine Corps. I never served in any part of the military, but you understand that well. If one commanding officer gave you an order and then an officer above him gave you a different order, it's not rebellion against the first, it's obedience to the highest. So when human beings tell us to disobey God, we don't spit in their face in a disrespectful way. We say with all respect, we have to obey God, not man. And Tony, this is happening now around the Kim Davis situation and others, a movement being led by Professor Robert George, who are basically saying no to the Supreme Court's reckless decision, June 26th, to redefine marriage, and saying you actually don't have the authority to do that. Do you see a pushback coming across America now?
I do. I think what we've seen in particular in the Christian community, Bible-believing Christians, is that they're now being pushed into a corner. Because many, and you know this, you've dealt with it, many have just wanted to stick their head in the sand, many pastors, and just say, well, you know, I just want to preach the gospel. I don't want to get involved in political issues. And I would argue they're not political issues, they're moral and spiritual.
Exactly.
But I won't go there right now. But they've now come to the point that the ability to preach the gospel is at risk. And I think people are realizing that it is now time that they have to stand. And it's not, when we say take a stand, as Colonel Paul in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, you stand. And that's a military command. It's an imperative command. And it is, there is a spiritual warfare that is raging. But human beings are not our enemy. It is the forces behind them that are leading us toward this darkness. But we have to resist in love, but we have to resist and stand for the truth.
Stand. It's the call is to stand. All right, I've got a few more minutes with Tony Perkins. We come back, I'm going to ask him, who's too pure for American Idol? The new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be taking some calls in a bit. Right now, I want to give maximum time to my guest, Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. His new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. You know, Tony, one thing that we've both seen, especially for the younger generation, but they do better with stories than they do with statistics. And that's the same with everyone. I could talk about, say, the horrors of the Holocaust and 6 million Jews killed, and then you tell the story of Anne Frank, and that can make much more of an impact. But your book is filled with stories and then scriptural examples, and in that regard can really speak in a multi-generational way and capture the hearts of people across America. One of the chapters is called Too Pure for American Idol. What's that about?
Well, Mariah Peters, it's fascinating. She's a very talented young lady who was on track to be a contestant on American Idol, in fact, was, and went all the way down to the final interview and the audition, and you know, getting prepared. You know, they treat them kind of rough in there sometimes. But the focus on her was the fact that she had never kissed a boy because she was saving herself for marriage in every form and every fashion. And they ridiculed her. And they said, you know what, you just need to go out and have a little life and have some fun and then come back. And then your music will have a whole new dimension to it. And, you know, she really wasn't all that excited about doing this to begin with. I mean, she was, but it was a kind of her parents and friends and others who had encouraged her because of her talent to do this. And she prayed through the whole thing and was trusting God. And then when at the very end, when it looked like the door was going to open for her to use this platform to be a Christian in the public eye, the door closed. But before she got to her car, I don't want to give away the whole story, but before she got to her car after being turned away at that final audition, she was approached by someone who heard her sing. Long story short, she's now a very successful Christian recording artist, doing great and married and doing well in her marriage and in her career. And it's a testimony to God's faithfulness when we're faithful to Him, not to cower. And that's the whole premise of this is, not to have a fear of man, but rather a greater reverence for God. And she had a greater reverence for God's call for her to be holy than she did a fear of men and others ridiculing her.
Mm. And also the issue of if you don't do it the world's way, that lie that says you can never get ahead, you can never make an impact, you can never have the platform that you felt you're
right.
Supposed to have. Pastors yield to that. Performing artists yield to that, athletes yield to that. Compromise comes in, and it's a lie because God is the one who knows how to exalt and open doors and close doors. So more inspiration in this. And after every chapter, friends, as you're reading the book, there are three or four questions for personal reflection. So it's not only inspirational, it's practical. Tony, just take 1 minute before you go and speak to our listeners. If they say, I struggle with fear, obviously, reading the book, No Fear, will be of great help to them. I struggle with the fear of man. What would you counsel that person to help them overcome that?
Well, the final chapter deals with that because, you know, one of the greatest fears we all have is the fear of death, is the fear of what's going to happen to us. And once we've settled that, we can work our way back. Once we have settled where we're going for eternity, once we have accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior and received the forgiveness that he gained for us on the cross, and we lay down our lives in understanding that our eternity is secure, then we can begin working back and deal with these temporal insecurities and fears that we face. But ultimately, we just have to decide to trust God, because faith and fear are incompatible. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. And we have to choose to live a life of faith, trusting God, that even when we see no positive outcome, we're going to trust him and trust in his goodness and his plan for our lives and let him see us through that period of darkness. And it's an exciting life, and that's the stories I tell here of these young people who have stood for the Lord, and the Lord has stood for them, and they're making a difference right where he placed them.
Yeah, that is so awesome to hear. And the way you laid it out, those are the ultimate issues. We get those settled. Everything else falls into place. Again, the brand new book, No Fear, Real Stories of Courageous Next Generations, for Courageous New Generations Standing for Truth. By the way, the release date in your book was the identical release date to my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. And we're calling for the same thing. It's going to be a joy to see you in Greenville, South Carolina, God willing, on Saturday. Keep up the awesome work on the front lines, Tony. Many are standing with you and looking to you.
All right, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on. I look forward to seeing you Saturday as well.
God bless. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, listen, friends, if you live in Greater Charlotte tomorrow night, Thursday night, I'm going to be doing a lecture sponsored by Ratio Christi Campus Group on the University of Charlotte campus, all right, or UNC Charlotte, University of North Carolina, Charlotte. I'm going to be doing a lecture on same-sex marriage, progress or regress. And the Ratio Christi has invited the Atheist Campus Group and LGBT Campus Group to come. I'm really hoping, I am absolutely hoping and praying that they will come. Yeah, I'm happy to edify the believers and strengthen the believers, but overwhelmingly, I want to reach those who differ and model a way to have civil dialogue together. So please join me if you can. Admission is absolutely free. It's going to start at 7 o'clock. I'll do a talk and then followed by Q&A. That's UNC Charlotte campus. You say, I don't know where that is. Just go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, just look on itinerary and you'll see the details there. All right. And then Saturday, 12 to 2. There may be a few thousand people there. It should be a great rally, religious freedoms rally. Senator Ted Cruz, the Benham brothers, Tony Perkins, others who've lost their jobs because of their faith stand. I'll be participating as well. Admission is free. This is Greenville, South Carolina. So maybe that's 2 hours outside of Charlotte. If you live anywhere in South Carolina, you know how to get there. And you need a ticket to get in, but admission is free. Okay? So just go to tedcruz.org. This is going to be a religious freedoms event. This is not going to be a political rally for a person. This is going to be a religious freedoms rally sponsored by Ted Cruz and his campaign. And we want to join together on the front lines here. So that'll be Saturday from 12 to 2. Friends, a number of books have come out now from different angles on the very same theme to strengthen believers in these difficult times. My book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, is a perfect complement for Dr. Al Mohler's new book, We Cannot Be Silent. His book came out about a month after mine. We've packaged the two together. We've reduced the price, and we're paying the postage. Want to get a few copies? Give them out as holiday presents. To order, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, or call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I just saw a note from one of our listeners, one of our new monthly supporters, who said, Dr. Brown, you and your team are my daily inspiration. Thank you. Thank you. I saw that note in someone else's mailbox in our office, and it blessed me. We are here to inspire you. We are here to encourage you. We're here to equip you. We're here to strengthen you. We're here to help you be strong so you can be an overcomer. Don't let the devil lie to you. Don't let the world lie to you. In Jesus, you're more than a conqueror. In Jesus, you're an overcomer. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, we honor our veterans today, and we are reminded by their courage that we must stand strong to honor Jesus with our hearts, our minds, our lives, our bodies, our all in all. Let's go to Christina. All right, I thought Christina was still there. I guess she's not. Had a testimony she wanted to share, but I guess she is gone. 866-348-7884. Tony Perkins just said that if we want to walk without the fear of man, we have to get straight where we stand for eternity. We have to get straight that we're in right relationship with God. And listen, friends, it's not just a matter of words. Fear not. Okay, won't fear. I'm not going to be afraid. But I am afraid. It's not just a matter of words. It's not just a matter of convincing ourselves mentally. There has to be a reality. There has to be a reality, and we know God is real, and I am his child. And therefore, when he says don't fear man, I have no reason to fear man because I fear and reverence and honor and love God. And the worst thing that anyone could do to me in this world is send me into a better place in the world to come. And by my blood, help ignite the fire of faith and courage in the hearts and lives of others. In other words, what Satan in the world means for evil, God can turn for greater good. A friend of a friend of mine was carjacked one day. Well, two guys jumped in his car. He didn't have the doors locked when he was sitting at a light, wherever it was. They jumped in his car, one guy in the front seat, one guy in the back seat. Put a gun to his head, said, give us all your money or we kill you. And the guy said, you would do that for me? You would kill me? Are you serious? You would send me to be with Jesus? I could go to be with Jesus now. And he got so excited and started praising God, they absolutely flipped out and ran. They got out of the car and ran. But it's an amazing example. It's an amazing example of someone who's free from the fear of death, free from the fear of man, because they live to do the will of God. Have you ever seen some movie and they capture some guy and they said, all right, tell us who you're working for. I can't. They said, look, we'll kill you if you don't. They're worse than kill me. I can't. And they're so afraid of the guy they're working for. Maybe he's threatened their family. Maybe he's threatened something else, that they'll die rather than betray the one they're working for because they're so terribly afraid of that person. Well, now change it. That we're talking about God and not some earthly boss. But change it that God's not threatening to kill our family. God's not threatening to hurt us and torture us. But rather, we know he has the power not only to kill the body, but to throw the soul into hell. That's scary. But he's our Father, and he loves us, and he wants to do good. And he says, just fear me, don't fear people. There's this reality, friends, where everything else disappears. There's this reality where suddenly the fear is not there. In fact, I want to tell you about something that happened in my own life a few years ago. Then I want to talk to you about Americans. Do they believe in heaven? Do they believe in hell? Very interesting. And tell you what, we'll play some clips from last night's debate, too.
The line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It is my joy to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Listen, friends, I want to share with you very, very plainly, very candidly, very honestly, a story from my own life. And it's something I lived through. Students were asking me about this. It came up last night. So let me just share this on the theme of no fear. I've ministered now in India 22 times in the last 22 years. God willing, December will be my 23rd trip there. And we've been to some difficult and dangerous places over the years. The ministry we work with has been threatened. The leader of the ministry has received very real death threats several times. He himself was stoned for preaching the gospel years ago, one of my closest friends in the world. In fact, if you think of him, just pray for my friend in India. He's been real sick and about to go to Germany for a few days before coming back to India. His schedule is always very intense, and he's been weak with fever and sickness. Let's just pray for his strength. His name is Yesu Padam, which means Jesus foot. So we've been on the front lines together as well. His workers that have been sent out and planted over 7,000 churches in tribal regions in India, they've been beaten. At least one has been killed. Others have really been threatened and have lived with real hardship, aside from just the general hardship of where they live, like dealing with cobra bites and things like that, and just the terrible nutritional situation that they're in, and just dangerous, difficult life in the tribal regions. Well, back in 1995, we had a very, very intense schedule. It was day and night. It was traveling all night to get to different locations. And the reason everything was so packed in on this trip, and I was there for almost a month, or really about a month fully. The reason things were especially tight was there was one particular village that had begged us to come, and it was a difficult journey to get there. The roads were out, just slow going to get there. I remember arriving like 2, 3 in the morning and going like 5, 10 miles an hour on these roads just to navigate all the potholes and things. But they had urged us, please come, please come, please come. And we got there knowing that it was a dangerous situation. It was a high caste village, and several years earlier, there was a girl from the neighboring village who was an untouchable, and she got involved with a guy who was high caste in that village, as a result of which there was a bloodbath. Scores and scores, it may have even been in the hundreds, these untouchables were slaughtered by the high caste villagers in retaliation for this relationship. Because of that, the church had almost gone underground in the village there. It was very, very difficult for them to function. And maybe they had about 50 members, but very few people even knew that they existed. And they begged us to please come and hold meetings, knowing in a very real way this would put them on the map. Well, I just knew from Yesu Padam that it was dangerous there. There were some problems, but I didn't think much of it. And I did what I've done before during the day when I was going to be preaching somewhere, is I just took a walk around the area. And many times it was rare to have a white person where I was. Sometimes I was the first white person anyone had seen. I had a colleague with me. Nancy was not with me on that trip. She'd gone the first few trips to India, but was not on that trip. But I had another friend who was tall, thin, with red hair and freckles. So that stood out. As we walked around the area, he and I, my friend Brian, we realized something's different here. Something is different. There was hostility in the air. People just looked at us like, who are you? As opposed to the normal smiles and giggles or a crowd forming around us because we were different, where they saw our faces, my face on the poster or something like that. Not this time. And when Yesu Padam heard me taking a walk, he did what? He said, not in this village. This is dangerous here. So that first night, a place called Karamchetu, we were supposed to speak. I was supposed to bring the main message. But there were a number of foreigners there, some from Korea, some from the States. And we were kept back in the house we were staying. They just were trying to size up the situation. Before Yesu Padam was a believer, he had been a Naxalite, which is a Maoist communist, a violent Maoist communist, guilty of acts of violence against the rich, part of the revolt against the establishment and the unfairness of the society in his eyes. So he really knew how these groups operated. He knew about terror groups and things like that. So he was sitting, it was kind of in a lower area. I remember when I got out there, it looked interesting. Instead of in a high embankment, he was like in a lower area, but he kind of surveying everything from out of sight, just eyes going everywhere, looking. And they weren't sure if it was safe for us to come out. They were concerned there could be some kind of riot. If police came in, then they'd take our passports and blacklist us, and I'd never be allowed in India again. That's what they were concerned about. But as the night went on, I was praying, and I was praying for safety and protection. I thought, no, that's not what to pray for. Let me pray for an open door for the gospel. And suddenly I had this mental picture, mental vision of I was preaching on a stage, there was water behind me, and suddenly these guys came up with these steel rods and they started beating us as we were preaching, and they beat us off the platform and we fell back into the water. And I thought first, am I willing to die for these people? And I said, honestly, Lord, I don't even know them. And I remember saying, if I die, let it be in Jerusalem. But I honestly said, Lord, I don't even know them. And then the thought, would you be willing to take a beating to preach the gospel? And as I said those words, that's when I had that mental picture. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. And that moment, knock at the door. All right, they want you to come out now. They want you to come. So they walk us out to the platform. That's when I saw where Yesu Padam was sitting, surveying everything, looking around. It was a tense environment. The worship was ending, and it was time to preach. And the pastor had sat Yesu Padam down first, and he said, look, you've got to be very careful when you speak here, because you can't mention idolatry, because the men of this village, they are really devout. The people of this village, they really are into worshiping idols. And don't say anything about murder, because you know what happened with those atrocities years ago with the killing of the untouchables. And don't say a word about adultery, because the men here are very adulterous in this town. Well, I mean, who's going to get up and preach a message about idolatry, murder, and adultery? That's not your normal message. But Yesu Padam said to him, we'll use wisdom, but we have to say what the Spirit gives us. And then the woman at whose home we're staying, her son was a Bollywood movie producer, and had a lot of money and got her a nice house, so she had some room in the downstairs, you know, nice house for where we were in India, to stay there in the downstairs. And she takes us aside and says to Yesu Padam and me, look, whatever you say, don't speak about the same things. Idolatry for these reasons, adultery for these reasons, murder for these reasons. And I gave the same answer. We'll use wisdom, but we have to speak what God gives us. So what does God lay on my heart that night? Preach a message on the Ten Commandments. Preach a message on the Ten Commandments. Yes. Which I did. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not commit idolatry. That was first half. You are all guilty. Every one of you here in this crowd are guilty. And now they turned off the power in the whole village. And we had a generator. So we powered our own meeting. So we were the only show in town. Nothing else is going on. Power's out in the whole village. So they maybe had 800, which for a crowd preaching in India is not a big crowd, but for that village was a massive crowd. And I preached what God gave me. I preached on the Ten Commandments. Yesu Padam translated boldly. And then the second half of the message was grace, all forgiven. Jesus paid for it on the cross. You're forgiven. You're free. Brand new life to follow him. Night one. And it went smoothly. No attacks, nothing. Night two. While the worship leader is sharing his testimony, he mentions that before he was a believer, when he was a Hindu, he really adored the snake god and feared and worshiped the snake god. So that would make a snake itself something that you would revere or something that hurt. But he said, now if a snake comes in his house, a dangerous snake, he's not afraid of it, he just kills it. Well, suddenly there's an uproar. He didn't know it, but the favorite deity that was worshipped in that village was a snake deity. And they thought he was specifically mocking them. So an uproar starts, and you realize something's going on here that's not good. And they get him right off the platform, And then a few of the women wearing these saris, so it's multiple robed garment. I'm not describing it properly, but there's kind of an outer covering that went with it. They grabbed a few of the saris. They wrapped him up and literally smuggled him out so people couldn't see him, literally. And then we got on the stage to preach. And all I wanted to do is give them the words of Jesus. I felt there was more after last night's message, and I just want to quote the words of Jesus and invite them to come. And as soon as we start speaking, the uproar begins. And I'll tell you what happened on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so back to Karam Chedu, India, 1995. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. So we get up on the stage to preach, but they're shouting already. There's an uproar already. We don't know what's going to happen. Someone yells out, white man's religion, which is often the accusation about Christianity in India, which is so far-fetched because it begins in the Middle East, not in Europe. But in any case, and came to India in the days of the Apostle Thomas, according to accounts that we have. So the crowd's stirring, and I realize it's about to be a riot here. I've never been in a situation that legitimately turn into a riot. You know, you may have a high school scene with a crowd where just a few guys start fighting and then it starts to spread, but there's kind of an end point to it. But I thought, this is about to be a riot. And two kids in the front, they get in a fist fight. I don't know where that came from. And they're starting to shout. So I'm thinking, I've got to just tell them about Jesus. I have more to say. I have more to say about who he is. I want you to know more about him. There was no concern for my life. There was no concern for my well-being. Eternity became so real that I know they're lost without God. They're lost without God. They're lost. They need the gospel. I have the words of life. They need to hear them. God is my witness. That was the reality. Nothing else seemed to matter. And of course, Yesu Padam would fearlessly preach the gospel. So I begin to speak. The uproar gets louder. The fist fight breaks out in the front. And next thing, men start to come on the platform. One leader in particular comes on the platform. He was the leader of the militant Hindu group in the village, and politically involved as well. He gets up. Others get up. I'm thinking, I'm much bigger than they are. I mean, a big American. They're Indians. They're smaller than me. I'm much bigger than they are. I could probably resist and hold on to the mic and but I'm trying to get a signal, like, what's the right thing to do? I knew I'm not going to physically confront the guys or anything like that. Well, now, you know, they all start to come on the stage. At that point, you know, the meeting's over. They take the mics from us. They're just going to shut the whole thing down. And I tell you again, the only issue was I was brokenhearted because I wanted to give them the rest of the message. Personal concern, fear of my own life or what could happen, it didn't exist because God was so real. And eternity was so real. Not because I'm so courageous, but because God was so real and eternity was so real. And someone yells out from the crowd, leave peacefully. And I looked at Yesu Padam and he nodded like they're telling you can leave. You should do it now. So I didn't see it then, but the men that were on the stage and that were coming up around us, they had knives and razor blades in their hands as well, which I didn't see at that point. That didn't really matter though. Because the fear factor, the only issue was loving God and wanting people to know his message. So I began to walk off the platform, and they opened up a little space for me. Like they're saying, we're letting you out. We're not going to hurt you. But you don't know. I mean, you got a crowd scene there. So I thought the Indian brothers are going to form a wall around me and walk me out, but for some reason that didn't happen. So I remember thinking, okay, I've got a long sleeve shirt on, but the sleeves are rolled up. I better roll them down in case I get hurt. And then do I take my glasses off? It's probably worse if I have them on. You could get hurt worse with the glasses on. So I take them off. And then I'm thinking, okay, what appearance should I have? How should my face look? How should my eyes look? This is a one-time moment here. I'm going to look in their eyes as I leave. I'm not putting my head down. I'm going to look in their eyes, and I wanted them to feel love and sadness. I looked into each of their eyes as I walked out, as many as I could. I wanted them to feel love and sadness. And I keep waiting for the blow to hit from this angle or that angle, and nothing happened. And then a few minutes later, someone else gets back to our house, another foreigner. And then one by one, the Indians. And next thing, we're back. And the leader says, listen, we're going to pack up and get out of here now. So it's going to be the middle of the night, but we need to get out of here. And then came back a little while later and said, no, we're not running anywhere. We'll stay here through the morning. And then the leader who shut everything down, he came in, like, now he could make peace because he had won and shut the meetings down. Well, next morning, I said to Yesu Padam, well, we're going to be leaving here without scars, huh? And he said, brother, it would have been better if we had some scars. I said, you know, I feel the same way. He said, if you weren't here, we would have just kept preaching until they beat us and we couldn't preach anymore. He said, but because you were here as a foreigner, they weren't concerned with me being beaten. They just were concerned that something would happen to my passport and I wouldn't be able to come back into the country. Now, there's a sad epilogue to the story, and there's a good story as well. Not long after those meetings, the leader, the militant Hindu leader that had come against us, his teenage son had a brain tumor. And he made a big vow, paid some Hindu priest, made a big vow with the promise that his son was going to be healed, and his son died. And the villagers, and I'm not saying this, the villagers thought it's because he opposed the Christians that his son died. God knows all the details, the whys and the whats. But that's what they said. It's because he opposed the Christians and stopped that meeting that his son died. And he was publicly humiliated after making this Hindu vow not long after that he killed himself. Tragic, isn't it? Tragic. Not long after that, my younger daughter Megan and her then, I guess it was then, fiance Ryan, they went to India with our ministry school, and they went and preached openly in that village, which was wide open. They could minister totally freely there because the atmosphere had changed. Friends, it's a privilege to be on the front lines of the gospel. And I speak what I speak behind the mic because it's what I speak on street corners when I preached on street corners or on subways in New York City. And it's what I've preached overseas the same way and what I've said on secular TV. I'm not here to please man. I'm not here to win the favor of man. I'm not here to just be a popular radio host. I'm here to help equip you to be a world changer and help lead the way in a Jesus-based moral and cultural revolution. Let me encourage you to stand with us. Join our team of torchbearers. Join our team of supporters. As I was writing to our torchbearers last night, I said, I wish I could take you around the world with me to see what the Lord is doing and the incredible places where we get to serve and the impact that we get to make because those who support us are part of us. Your gift of $1 a day or more, so $30 or more per month. For some of you, you could give five times that amount. You wouldn't even feel it. For others, it's the biggest faith stretch to even think of a dollar a day. But if you can do that, I believe the Lord will bless you and give you grace and meet your needs. No, he's not going to give you some new Rolls Royce if you support a ministry, but I'll tell you, you get treasure in heaven. You get the joy of seeing souls that have been saved and transformed. And I do believe in the midst of it that God will faithfully meet you as you honor him. So become a torchbearer. We send you a book, an inspirational book to help equip you and strengthen you also as our thank you gift. Every month, a new message that I've preached that'll stir you. You have free access to our online classes, which are otherwise $50 or $75 a class to watch or listen to. And you also get a 15% discount in our online bookstore, which is a massive savings with all the resources we have. So join us today, would you? Go to askdrbrown.org and click on donate to stand with us. My bottom line today, Jesus said, don't fear those who kill the body but can't kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. When you fear him, you don't fear people. Well, one thing every Christian does is buy stuff. We are consumers. Can we make a moral difference with our consumerism?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In short, God expresses his love for the entire world through Jesus. Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. He healed those who came to him. He fed the hungry that came to him. And he died for the sins of every human being. Why? Because God so loved the world. And his death is the propitiation, not just for our sins, the elect, but the sins of the whole world, based on which I can go to every human being and say, look at the extent of the love of God, that Jesus shed his blood for you and for me. And if you will turn to him and ask for his mercy, he will save you, he will forgive you, and he will keep you faithfully to the end if you will put your trust in him. I can look that person in the eye and quote John 3:16 and know that that person is one of those. That person is one of those for whom the Lamb died. I can say that emphatically. I can say atonement has been made. The price has been paid. What will you do with it? And that person can receive God's grace by his grace, or that person can refuse it. Throughout Scripture, we're told to make choices from beginning to end of the Bible. I say it again, from Genesis to Revelation. And therefore, God is grieved when people sin against him. He is grieved when the choice is refused. He offers death and life to Israel and says, choose, choose life. Joshua says, choose whom you'll serve. And then we come to the end of the book of Revelation, and the Spirit and the bride say, come. And let the one who hears come. And whoever is thirsty, come. The offer is for each of you. Jesus died for you. If you'll turn to him, he'll save you.
Yes, friends, that was me, yours truly, your voice of moral and cultural revolution, in a debate with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. James White, that was held at Southern Evangelical Seminary a couple years back, debating predestination, election, and the will of God. We'll hear Dr. White's response in a bit, but I play that not only because it's interesting and it's biblical and it's an important debate and discussion, but to remind you, we're extending from last week our digital download discount. How do you like that? Easy to remember. 30% off on all digital downloads. So that means debates that we've put online, exclusive debate online with Rabbi Shmuley on the kosher Jesus, lectures I've given, different classes I've taught, audio or video. So these are instant downloads. You don't have to worry about shipping. You don't have to worry about having a DVD player or an MP3 player or anything like that. Just wherever you are, on your tablet, on your computer, you can download this, and then it's yours to keep. And 30% off the already low prices. So to find out more, go to askdrbrown.org. Just go to the store and click on digital downloads. We extended this from last week. We got a great response. We want to be a blessing to you. When we come back, I'm going to be speaking with Chris Stone from Faith Driven Consumers, and we're going to talk about something very, very interesting, which is the power of the Christian dollar, the impact that Christians can make by where they shop or where they put their money. Other groups have done this successfully, and we'll talk it through. Are these the kind of things Christians should be thinking about? Is this a righteous use of funding? Is this just another boycott thing, or are we trying to be good stewards? What companies are rated well and what are not? We mentioned Starbucks the last couple of days, the controversy of a just red cups for the Christmas season to just make it generic, kind of nothing. And some are saying boycott Starbucks, and Donald Trump said maybe we should. Hey, look, if we boycott it, all the companies that we didn't agree with, I couldn't use my credit cards, I couldn't fly airlines, I couldn't use my computers. So how do we handle this? We're going to talk about this with Chris Stone on the other side of the break.
Fire we want, for fire we It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If we simply look at what the Bible specifically teaches on this subject, remember what Hebrews chapter 7 said. It told us that because Jesus lives permanently, he holds his priesthood permanently, he is able to save completely those who draw near unto God by him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. The work of Christ on the cross and his work as a high priest in interceding for us are of one thing. Michael has said that he can die for someone he doesn't intercede for. I believe that is a fundamental error in the reading of the New Testament. The New Testament is very, very clear that this sacrifice of Jesus Christ was as a high priest, and as such, it accomplishes the bringing about of a relationship of peace between those for whom he died and the Father for whom he intercedes.
James White and some of his remarks are a debate on predestination, election, and the will of God. Remember, 30% off all digital downloads. So download our DVD, download our video of the debate, about 2 hours long. You'll find it informative, whatever side or not side you're on that issue, at AskDrBrown.org. All right, faith-driven consumer, the Faith Equality Index. Chris Stone is founder of Faith-Driven Consumer. They've done some major surveys in terms of which companies are closest to our moral values, which are not, with some guidelines in terms of where Christians should put our money. So, Chris, it is great to have you back on The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
Now, Chris, I was just looking at the letter that you sent out to many faith leaders, realizing I did not send my picture yet to be put up to join you. So I'll do that, just an email oversight. But tell us first, what got you going, the birth of Faith-Driven Consumer? What motivated you?
Well, you know, it's really grounded in asking God, how should I use the talents that you've given me, in this understanding of the community of Faith-Driven Consumers and using the professional talents and skills that I have as a brand strategist. It's all really come from that blessing of discernment, and the opportunities and the doors that have been opened have been far beyond our ability to create. They've really been blessed.
So are there other groups, though, that have successfully wielded the dollar and actually brought about policy changes within companies or changes in culture by saying, hey, we're going to spend our money here or we're not going to spend our money there?
Absolutely. And the gold standard of that is the HRC, the Human Rights Commission, which advocates for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. They have something called the Corporate Equality Index. They have 366 companies that have scored a perfect 100 on a scale of 0 to 100, a perfect score. And they advocate for those companies, and those companies advocate for the community. And they have truly and significantly influenced the culture in the marketplace. So, yes, there is a great case study to follow. We are on the same track with similar strategies, and we're making good headway.
And when you talk about these 366 companies, a good number of them are top Fortune 500 companies. Some of the biggest companies in America score perfectly there. And what they're calling for, if most Americans read it, it's pretty radical stuff. It's a real all-in, the whole LGBT activist cause that they're going for and still scoring 100. And I remember following them years back when the numbers were much lower in terms of where companies were at, and it's become the thing. So in your view, Chris, it's not just a matter of people embracing the ideology, it's a matter of companies looking at the dollar as well?
Well, companies looking at the dollar, they accept the LGBT community as a part of their stakeholders, of their community as a brand, and they're reaching out to those people in a way that's important to them. We're doing the exact same thing. We said, hey, there are 41 million faith-driven consumers in the United States. They spend $2 trillion a year, and they're eagerly, 70% of faith-driven consumers are actively looking for brands that will welcome and embrace them. That is a huge percentage of our community is looking for a brand home. And the companies are starting to recognize that fact. They're driven by a number of factors, everything from it's the right thing to do to it's good business. I'm looking at a copy of the September Harvard Business Review that speaks to a very similar topic, and it clearly indicates that boycotts, which is what we promote, doing business with those and rewarding those who do it right, is a great and proven tool. So you're talking about the Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts cup thing earlier. Companies that reach out to faith-driven consumers will receive a reward. There are $30 billion of faith-driven consumer money that's going to be spent at Christmas alone. We have a clear opportunity to pick the winners in the marketplace.
All right, so when you talk about something like Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, I'm not a coffee drinker. It doesn't impact me directly. But years ago, just because of my personal dealings with Starbucks having to do with the Gay Pride event, when they made plain that they were going to aggressively sponsor Gay Pride, but if we're talking about other moral and cultural issues, in no way would they get involved with those whatsoever, things that were on a different ideological scale. Their dealings with me, even when I sent them pictures of what happened at a local Gay Pride event and all of that, it was so distasteful. I just said, hey, I'm not even going to go in there and buy a bottle of water just for myself, for my own conscience. Not trying to put them out of business, obviously, but just saying, hey, for my own conscience, I can't do it. If this is now an issue, which is it's a little thing in the overall scope of things, all right, you know, Starbucks and the coffee cups and no Christmas anything, it's a little thing in the overall scheme of things. But since everybody does spend money and they do buy coffee and they do buy gifts and they do buy whatever, it's something we can do. In other words, we're not talking about if every American is not in front of an abortion clinic this Sunday, then you're all going to hell. Well, that'd be an extreme statement. If every American is not standing against gay activism tomorrow, then you're all going to hell. Well, those are ridiculous extreme statements. But to say, hey, if you're going to spend money, you're going to buy a cup of coffee, why not spend it with a company that shares your values? That's an easy way to send a message, isn't it?
Absolutely. And on a global scale, taking away the fact that it's faith-driven consumers, just on a global scale, currently 63% of consumers now indicate that they're only buying from goods and services from brands that appeal to their beliefs and ideals. So this is a common everyday consumer decision, and as faith-driven consumers, we're no different. The question is, does God care what we do with the money that he gives us that we keep for ourselves?
All right,
you know, it's a stewardship opportunity.
Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Well, the average American only spends 3-4% of their time involved with God at their church and study or whatever. They're spending the rest of their time in the world. And I don't mean in the world like living a sinful life. I mean at work, at play, at school, shopping. They're out in the community doing things that are about their normal daily activities. Some people will go on the mission field. They'll go to a foreign country and they'll share the gospel. But the rest of us who are sitting at home, we have an opportunity to leverage our everyday activity, to be a marketplace missionary in our everyday activity by simply choosing who we do business with. Because when we do business with somebody, whether by omission or commission, we are engaged in what they do. So here's an opportunity to pick the best companies. Not all of them are going to be perfect, but pick the better company, do business with them, and encourage them, help them be transformed by who we are, by salt and light, and change the world. It's a simple concept. You don't really have to go out of your way. And we have on our website a four-step process that anybody can follow. And you can go to the website at Christmas Boycott. That's Christmas Boycott. And you can see under the Activity Center exactly what you do. And you're doing most of it anyway.
All right, friends, did you get that? Christian Boycott. Is it .com?
It's Christmas, like the
Christmas. Sorry, no, you said it. I just misstated it.
Yeah,
of course. This is actually a technique to get them to get it right. I make the mistake; they hear it better.
Okay. Wonderful.
Christmasboycott.com. So friends, go there. And Chris, if you could stick around for a few minutes, I've got some questions specifically I want to ask about what you found in your polling data, your surveying about which companies are which. But friends, take a minute, go to ChristmasBoycott.com. So think of it. If you know, like a local grocery store, one of them removed the raciest pictures, the magazines with the raciest pictures, when customers said, hey, do you have to have these at the checkout counters? It's degrading to women. We don't want our kids around it. Men don't want to be having a look at this. And they removed it, and then another one didn't. What? I shopped more at the one that removed it. I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for doing that. ChristmasBoycott.com. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. A little later in the show, I'm going to play a series of clips from last night's Republican presidential debate. Right now, I'm looking at the website, ChristmasBoycott.com. It's time for a Christmas boycott. As faith-driven consumers, we will spend an incredible $30 billion over the holidays. Here's a way to make it redemptive. Four steps: petition, engage, recruit, lead. So ChristmasBoycott.com. And I'm speaking with Chris Stone, who is the founder of Faith Driven Consumer. So Chris, you've recently updated your data in terms of the companies that are the most friendly to our values. Again, you're saying it's not perfect. It's not that necessarily they're going to agree with every stand we take, or that they won't use money here and there in ways that we differ with. But the ones that come out the best, and then the ones that come out the worst, what are some of the highlights of that survey?
Well, the highlights that you'll notice quickly is that even the best companies often score on a 0 to 100 scale in the 30s or 40s. That really demonstrates how little traction faith-driven consumers have in the marketplace compared to other communities. Now, you might ask why that is. And no, we have not been able to determine that there's a mass conspiracy. In fact, what we have determined is that other communities have been active and engaged in securing their place in the marketplace. And by and large, faith-driven consumers have not. As a matter of fact, I talked to a major C-level individual the other day, and he said, our LGBT and other community employees are very active in helping us do better in these ratings and engaging, and the Christian employees are not. So a lot of this is on us. We need to step up and champion our cause and be good stewards of what God has given us in the marketplace.
Yeah, one of my friends who works with Bank of America was telling me how unbelievably well-organized and aggressive gay and lesbian employees are on management levels, and the active steps they take to see their vision, their agenda, what they feel is right and best, to see that enacted in the company. And then, of course, from the outside, others are saying, hey, this is good business. Do this, and we'll gladly spend our money with you. So if a company thinks it's a good thing, and especially they think it's a profitable thing, yeah, they go in this direction. So name a company or two that would be at the top of your list and a company or two that would be at the bottom.
Well, the obvious two leaders are Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby, but probably one who's more aggressively engaged with our community, again, in a relative sense, Walmart. Tyson Foods scored very well as an example. On the other end, you just mentioned one, Bank of America is tied with Unilever for the worst in the whole list at 11. Mm. So, I mean, 11 shows either active engagement in the wrong way or simply no engagement in the right way. Then you can probably argue either side of it in that particular case.
Right. All right. So on ChristmasBoycott.com, fourfold strategy: one, petition; two, engage; three, recruit; four, lead. We just got a few minutes, but let's run through these quickly. Step number one, petition. So what do you do first?
Well, the first thing that you do is you look at the survey, you get some understanding of it, and then you can engage in signing the petition. Because what you're doing is you're asking these brands to add us in, include us in their rainbow of diversity. And that is the very first step, because if you do not ask, you will not get. The second thing is to engage. You know, contact your favorite brands. There's a list of them here, and we're not suggesting that you call up and you say, you're terrible. You know, none of this vilifying language, because we don't want to come across the wrong way. We want to share the light of Jesus, but encourage them. Say, thank you for being the best in class, and how can we help you do better? And the ones that aren't, say, hey, we'd really like to have a relationship with you. Will you let us in to your community? Third step, you're going to share it with people. You're going to continue to be a leader in what we're doing. So there is a continual flow here. All of it's listed one after the other. Recruit your friends and neighbors. You know, we're those of us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram, share it. Recruit your neighbors. Share the good news. Share how to do it. Make it a community effort. And be a leader. This is a competitive process. Who can score the most points? Who can be the leader and champion the cause the best?
And then as this is happening, you're convinced that just by us being engaged in the marketplace, both with where we spend our money and what we communicate to the companies, that we can actually get them to be more sensitive to things that are important to us, and that that can actually make a cultural impact.
Well, even the most cynical person has to understand that if a brand publicly ignores 41 million consumers, that's not going to go well.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And a brand that embraces 41 million consumers, that's going to go well. Especially when you think about it, 77% of faith-driven consumers have indicated consistently that when they find that their current brand is less compatible than an alternative brand, that they will switch. That speaks volumes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when folks ask, how is it that a tiny percentage of the population, less than 2%, has made such a massive impact on the society and brought about societal change, I say, well, they haven't done it on their own. People have been their allies. People have looked at gay activism as the new black, and therefore they're standing for that. But in that element, of, in terms of, quote, straight allies, it's big business. Big business has made a monumental impact. So we saw the governor of Indiana absolutely cave in, just completely cave, when big business, Apple, Walmart, others said, we don't like your religious freedom bill here, and we're going to take our companies out, or another major company, we're going to get out of your city, or we're going to out of your state, whatever it is. And instantly, to the shock of all of us around the nation, the governor caved. And it was big business that was right in the front lines of that cave. So absolutely, big business makes a difference. And then there is the stewardship issue. So, Chris, I appreciate what you're doing. Friends, ChristmasBoycott.com, the place to go. If you're going to spend money anyway, go the extra mile, literally maybe an extra mile to another store. Take 30 seconds or a minute to shoot out a note of appreciation or of concern. And let's all together do something that we can do very easily and make a difference. Chris, keep up the good work. Thanks for what you're doing. And may we see change through the money we spend.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me today.
You are very welcome. 866-34-TRUTH. Friends, if you live in Charlotte, join me tomorrow night, Thursday night. Charlotte, North Carolina, UNC Charlotte. I'm going to do a lecture on same-sex marriage, progress or regress on the campus, and hopefully we'll have a good number of non-believers. Those who differ with us will be there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We will have a wall. The wall will be built. The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel. The wall works. Believe me. Properly done. Believe me.
That was the voice of Donald Trump at last night's Republican presidential debate. Today is Veterans Day. And from the heart, my deep appreciation and thanks for those who sacrificed for our country, sacrificed for our freedoms, the families of vets as well. Many of you wearing the scars inside and outside of your sacrifice. Some have sacrificed for the well-being of other nations and not even been thanked for it, but we are thankful and appreciative. 866-34-TRUTH. Switching subjects now, we'll take a moment to talk about last night's debate. I was teaching at our night school class with our first-year students, and we had a real prayer outpouring that led to some prayer for about probably 2 hours after class. It was about an hour and 45 minutes after class when I left and others were still praying. So I got home later and didn't see the debate, but did read about it and listen to some of the clips. So I'm curious, if you watched the debate last night, if you thought a particular candidate did the best, if you did watch, 866-34-TRUTH. But here's some of the interaction on the subject of immigration. We'll go to clip number one, Joey. This is Dr. Ben Carson. Again, the subject they're discussing is immigration.
We should vet all candidates. I have no problem with being vetted. What I do have a problem with is being lied about and then putting that out there as truth. And I don't even mind that so much if they do it about with everybody, like people on the other side. But, you know, when I look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, who sits there and tells her daughter and a government official that, no, this was a terrorist attack, and then tells everybody else that it was a video, where I came from, they call that a lie. And
yeah, that was on the subject of vetting. The next clips are on immigration, so let's continue that. But important points by Dr. Carson. This is Donald Trump speaking more on the issue of immigration. Clip number two.
We are a country of laws. We need borders. We will have a wall. The wall will be built. The wall will be successful. And if you think walls don't work, all you have to do is ask Israel. The wall works. Believe me. Properly done. Believe me.
Can you just send 5 million people back with no effect on the economy?
You're going to have to bring people. You're going to have to send people out. Look,
so
we're
what
a country,
will you do?
We're a country of laws. We either have a country or we don't have a country. We are a country of laws. Going to have to go out, and they'll come back. But they're going to have to go out, and hopefully they get back. But we have no choice if we're going to run our country properly and if we're going to be a country.
All right. We got time for one more. Clip number five. Let's get this right in now, Senator Ted Cruz.
And I will say, for those of us who believe people ought to come to this country legally and we should enforce the law, we're tired of being told it's anti-immigrant. It's offensive. I am the son of an immigrant who came legally from Cuba to seek the American dream. And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law. And I would note, try going illegally to another country. Try going to China or Japan. Try going to Mexico. See what they do. Every sovereign nation secures its borders. And it is not compassionate to say we're not going to enforce the laws and we're going to drive down the wages for millions of hardworking men and women. That is abandoning the working man.
All right, we're back. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Are you going to be joining me at the Religious Freedoms Rally in Greenville, South Carolina on Saturday? Are you? Senator Ted Cruz will be speaking. Tony Perkins will be speaking. The Benham Brothers will be speaking. I'll be leading in prayer. Yeah, find out. Go to tedcruz.org. Join me. It's going to be an event.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I understand that when the mainstream media covers immigration, it doesn't often see it as an economic issue. But I can tell you, for millions of Americans at home watching this, it is a very personal economic issue. And I will say the politics of it would be very, very different if a bunch of lawyers or bankers were crossing the Rio Grande, or if a bunch of people with journalism degrees were coming over and driving down the wages in the press.
Again, that was from last night's debate, Senator Ted Cruz. I didn't get to watch it, listen to some clips, read some parts that, in terms of the interaction, and then read reports on those who felt this one did the best or that one did the best. So just curious, if you did get to watch it, who do you think did the best? 866-34-TRUTH. And by the way, for all of our friends listening on our great stations in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area, are you aware of what your city council did in Dallas? You're aware that the city council, this is outside of your vote, approved the transgender bathroom ordinance. The Dallas City Council, as reported on LifeSite News, voted unanimously on Tuesday to approve an ordinance allowing transgender people to use the facilities of the opposite sex. So Mayor Mike Rawlings said, we're a very diverse city. We want to make sure everyone is protected. That's complete double talk there, because now a whole lot of people will not feel protected. I heard a woman say, listen, I was raped in a bathroom years ago. It's still traumatic for me to go into a public bathroom. The last thing I need is someone who's a biological male going in there in a dress because he identifies as a woman. Yeah, he may be harmless. He may not be a sexual predator, but what about the protection of that woman? And what about the protection of your child that you send into the bathroom at a McDonald's or something? Right, honey, I can see you just walk to the bathroom right there. And maybe she's 8 or 9 years old, and, you know, she just walks down there, and she comes out a second later. There's a man in the bathroom, Daddy. Well, you're going to explain. Well, it's actually not a, well, he is male, but I mean, he identifies. Well, you're going to explain that to a little girl? And I thought protecting everyone. I thought protecting everyone was the issue. And what about the fact, which is now documented, there are examples in different cities and college campuses documented where heterosexual predators have used this abusively. Here's my opportunity to go in and spy on women. Here's my opportunity to go and be with the ladies and check things out in an environment they're not going to be suspecting anything. Heterosexual men, predators. This opens the door to predators. And it opens the door to confusion, among others. You say, what's the solution? Well, don't impose the struggles of less than 1% of the people as much as we care about their struggles. Don't impose their struggles on the rest of the society. But just letting you know, people of Dallas, this has happened. You need to do what Houston did and turn this thing around. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Brewster, New York. Jay, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Dr. Brown, my question, first of all, I want to say God bless you for all you do. And being the voice that you are, the godly voice, my question is, how should Christians respond? I'm actually watching Ted Cruz myself, and I know you've endorsed him, mm-hmm. and he's actually one of my favorites that I'm watching right now.
Yeah.
But anyone who's talking about or even mentions the deportation of 11 million immigrants, or rather people that have come here, which we really don't know whether they've been here for 5 years or 30 years, really, and the breaking apart of families and all that. How should Christians respond to that, in good conscience? Because we want to enforce the laws moving forward, and we want to create a wall, I mean, a really big wall. But what about the actual, grabbing people and pulling them out of their homes? And a lot of these people are professionals and people that have been here for decades, especially around, you know, when people usually have come here, even though they broke the law, sure, no, two wrongs don't make a right. But the fact is, a lot of these people are now are very much integrated into our American culture.
Right.
I don't know, it just seems kind of, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I've heard. Donald Trump has been the strongest on that in terms of deportation. Other candidates have been more moderate. Some months back, I brought on Pastor Samuel Rodriguez, who's one of the most respected evangelical Hispanic leaders in the nation. And I said, listen, I have not focused on this as much because you can't focus on everything. I've focused on things where God has burdened me. And I don't claim to have that much wisdom on this. So give me your input. And his input was compassionate, but also remembering that we have a nation of laws. I spoke to a pastor in Juarez, Mexico, and he was talking about the wrongness of what has to be done to come over from Juarez illegally into the United States and how much against the illegal immigration that he was. But I think you have to put things in several categories. One category is there are people that just don't belong here. They are criminals by background. They should not, we had it years back with people coming in from Cuba like that. Not all, of course, God forbid, but there were many that were problems in Cuba, so now they become America's problem. We have people that should just not be in this country. They're here illegally, and they don't belong here. They have criminal records, and they have not reformed. They shouldn't be here. They shouldn't be on our tax dollars in jails and other things like that. And it would seem self-evident that they should be deported. You have others who came in illegally, but they have really worked their way into becoming productive American citizens. And their kids are now in our schools here, and they're working jobs. Well, what you have to have is some kind of fast-track way for them to formally become citizens. And then there are others who have obviously become citizens legally. So I would think that you have to divide it up in that way. Those that, even if they came in wrongly, have, you could say, earned a place to stay, then give them a faster track way to become citizens because they've been functioning as citizens for years. But those who are dragging things down, those who are not functioning as citizens, those who are not contributing, again, because we don't have the capacity to endlessly absorb people that are not even going to become part of the country, they may have to be sent back. And if you look in Scripture, if you look in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, when the people of Israel intermarried, the exiles coming back from Babylon, when they intermarried with the surrounding nations and had kids, you know what happened? They had to send away their wives and kids. And that was the divine will. They had to send away their wives and their kids because it was a marriage contrary to God's way and God's order. It would ultimately pollute and destroy the nation. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case here, that you tear families apart. If you have bona fide families, I think you have to find a way for them to try to do things legally now and give them a time frame in which to do it. And if they can't, they can't stay. But my take on it, and again, I'm absolutely not an expert on this, Jay, but my take on it is that most of the candidates are trying to be pragmatic in the way that they're approaching this. I don't think you could just have total amnesty without really hurting America and hurting our principles. Everybody's in because many people came here illegally and they shouldn't be here. But then you have to try to work practically and compassionately with those who have really been productive parts of our country for years with their kids being raised fully as Americans. So that's my take on it, sir.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Brown. God bless you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I'm looking at a stat here. Illegal immigrants accounted for nearly 37% of federal sentences in 2014. Wow. Is that a typo there? FY, should that be Florida? Or is that, in Florida. So illegal immigrants accounted for nearly 37% of federal sentences in Florida in 2014. Joanne. Oh, I was going to Joanne to get Joe. I wanted Joanne's input on the debate last night. But let me take a break before I do that. Let me remind you, friends, that the nation faces lots of complex problems. And I want to push a button, like you might. I want to push a button and see everything change overnight. I want to see Americans loving God. I want to see America blessed by God. I want to see families whole. I want to see individuals whole. I want to see revival and Jesus revolution and reformation. Boom, push a button. In Jewish ministry, I want to see mass turning of rabbis and Orthodox Jews and secular Jews around the world tomorrow. No, today. You know, I want to push a button and see everything happen now. But we know that's not how the world works. What we do know is that every day you can be used by God for good or for evil. Before I knew the Lord, I was an evangelist for darkness. I loved ungodly music, and I shared it with all my friends. I loved doing drugs, and I tried to get my friends to do more drugs. I was an evangelist for evil. When I got saved, I became an evangelist for good. And friends, it's not only in leading people to Jesus. It's in the way that we live. It's the lives we live day by day. What kind of father are you? What kind of mother are you? What kind of brother are you? What kind of sister are you? What kind of employer are you? What kind of influence do you have? What kind of impact you make? Hey, there's a grocery store I do most of my shopping in when I'm getting groceries. And I always try to be smiling and friendly because I want to be a blessing while I'm there. Give us strength to
always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, my bad. It wasn't a typo for Florida. It was FY, fiscal year. Sorry about that. Illegal immigrants accounted for nearly 37% of federal sentences in fiscal year 2014. So, that's a big, big issue. That's a big, big problem. That is not only a question of, okay, what crimes were committed? Who was shot? Who was robbed? Who was raped? All right? That's one question. Next question, what's it going to cost our government now to bring these people through the court system and then to have them in jail, and our tax dollars are supporting them in jail? They shouldn't have been here in the first place. So those that are unsavory, those who are not productive parts of society, is there any reason why they shouldn't be deported rightfully? And that's a fair question to ask. I can't see any reason to say no to that. And being Christian does not just mean that you say everything's fine. Listen, when your parents raising your kids, you're forgiving, you're compassionate, but you have rules, you have standards, and there are consequences for misbehavior and things like that. If you don't have those, everything collapses, does it not? So let's take that into account as we look at these big pictures here. So again, just in case you just tuned in, tomorrow night, UNC Charlotte, University of North Carolina at Charlotte. I'll be doing a lecture on same-sex marriage, progress or regress, followed by Q&A from the audience. And we're hoping that those who don't agree with us, non-believers in God, gay and lesbian sympathizers and activists, will be there, along with Christians and others who are curious, to hear the lecture and to raise questions afterwards. It should be a delight. Really, really looking forward to that. And then Saturday, so I'm telling you so you can come if you live in Charlotte, all right? If you're listening to me right now in Salt Lake City, Utah, or in the heart of Dallas, it's probably going to take a little while to get here, so just pray for us. But if you live in the area, come out tomorrow night to get details as to where it is. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just check out itinerary. And then Saturday, Greenville, South Carolina, Religious Freedoms Rally. This is going to be a historic event in Greenville, led by Senator Ted Cruz. I'll be leading in prayer. Tony Perkins will be speaking. The Benham Brothers will be speaking. Others who've literally lost their jobs because of the gospel, because of their stand for truth, they'll be speaking and sharing. So it should be a really inspirational day. But you need tickets. Tickets are free. But this is just a way to have a head count and to know what crowd to expect. The tickets are what get you in, but the tickets are free. So go to tedcruz.org. All right, tedcruz.org. Find out more. I'll be driving a couple hours to get there to participate, then have to turn around and go straight to Winston-Salem, where I'm ministering over the weekend, Saturday night, Sunday morning. You're welcome to come if you're listening on one of our great stations in Winston-Salem. Please join us again on my itinerary. All the information is there at askdrbrown.org. All right, let me change subjects and just take you into a debate with my dear friend, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, Orthodox Jewish rabbi, known as America's most famous rabbi. This is a debate we did when his book, Kosher Jesus, had just come out to great fanfare and controversy in the Jewish world. And my book, in response, was about to come out. He wrote Kosher Jesus. I wrote The Real Kosher Jesus. and we had a debate on it in New York City, right in Manhattan. So you'll hear me, you'll hear Rabbi Shmuley. This is clip number 16 from the debate.
Why is it that Jesus quotes Psalm 22? Evi, evi, lama saftani. He's drawing our attention. My God, why have you forsaken me? To that psalm, to Psalm 22. And saying, I am not being delivered from death right now. I am hanging here on this cross. He quotes it, so we go and read it. And when we go and read it, there in our Hebrew scriptures is an amazing account of a righteous sufferer whose descriptions there, the way it's described and stretched out and publicly mocked and garments divided, and according to some readings, his hands and feet pierced. This description of this righteous sufferer, we go there because Yeshua quotes those words on the cross, and we go to Psalm 22, and we read those words, and we see they speak of a righteous sufferer who is delivered from the jaws of death so that all the ends of the earth, the Gentiles, praise God. Who, pray tell, is that referring to, if not Jesus?
I'm convinced by that. But what did Rabbi Shmuley have to say in response? Joey, let's listen to the next clip. Rabbi Shmuley weighs in with his position.
I think Jews do have a certain authority in looking at the life of Jesus because he was a Jew and he kept Judaism. Let us recall that the religion of Jesus was not Christianity, it was Judaism. The reason why... That means that Jesus ate kosher food. We know this because even the Jerusalem church continued to eat kosher food and was critical of Paul and Peter and those who no longer were keeping kosher. Jesus defends when the Sabbath is not being kept, giving very good arguments. He keeps the Jewish Sabbath. His religion is Judaism, so we have a right to school. I don't want to say that's a pejorative. We have a right to share with our Christian brothers and sisters the Jewishness of Jesus, which enriches their faith.
Now, I agree with much of what Rabbi Shmuley said there, except when he said Judaism, Judaism as it existed then was far less developed than it is today. Kosher food laws, far more developed today than they were then. Sabbath laws, far more developed, carried out now than they were then. Oh yes, there were many traditions that existed, and Jesus observed those traditions that did not get in the way of the word and the spirit of the word. But you'll find this debate really, really helpful. My debate, we played clips from earlier with Dr. James White on predestination, election, the will of God. My lecture on is Israel an evil occupier. Other resources we have now uploaded to our website, which means instead of ordering a DVD that we'll send you in the mail, it takes time to get there, and then you need a DVD player for it. You have to have it with you to give the presentation. If you live overseas, you've got to pay all the extra shipping. Now you can just go to our website, and we have more and more resources being added to our growing digital library, audio resources, whole classes I've taught, and video resources. So we did this last week, but we got such a good response that we wanted to extend it a few more days into this week. So when you go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and then you just click on the homepage on store, go to digital resources, and find out what you can get, explore what's there, and it's 30% off the prices that are there. There's a code, I believe, that you use. So we'll be right there in your home within minutes, right on your tablet, right on your computer. Watch the debate. It's yours to keep. Listen to the lecture. Be edified by it. Show it at your Bible study. Show it at your church service to 10,000 people. We're thrilled the more that you use it. But be blessed by having these resources, and we want to be a blessing to you. So that's 30% off on the digital downloads. I am not going to give out the phone number, despite my phone number giving reflex. I won't give it out because there's no time to take calls. But we're going to have a special show tomorrow on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be informative, eye-opening, and as always, I'll be waiting for your Jewish-related calls. My bottom line today, if you're going to spend money, spend it wisely. Be a good steward and consider what companies you want to spend your money at.